Dieter and Hutch live from 4949. John Lynch just spoke to the media. What'd you get out of that?
Spoke some words, certainly said some sentences that were strung together into mostly cogent thoughts.
The man can speak.
Certainly said some things. How many of them were notable? Not too many,
no.
I would say.
No.
George Kittle's not here. If you're into reading body language, if you're into trying to dissect
all that.
That's
why we hired the body language expert.
We do. We actually have one on retainer, and it's ruining us, which is why we've been hawking the draft guide. Point is, if you're trying to dissect the vibe, at least, in the negotiations with Purdy, sounded a little bit better than the sort of terse response when asked about George Kittle.
George Kittle, we are working on it. We're working on it. It's fine. It's fine. That wasn't the exact quote, but that was the energy.
We don't know if he's going to be here, but it's okay.
Also, can we establish this is all par for the course? Like, George Kittle never shows up. He's got to get 181 days in Nashville so he doesn't have to pay property estate taxes and stuff. Like,
he's got to get his lifts in.
This man's accountant is very clear, do not show up to the voluntary workout. Brock Purdy, he doesn't worry about that stuff. He's in a low tax bracket. He doesn't have to care. He soon will have to care. But as of right now, he does not care about the 181 rule. And for him, he has the leverage. He's the quarterback. He's 24, 25 years old. He's been to a Super Bowl. He doesn't need to worry about this is the last time. He doesn't have to play hardball.
Right.
It's already hardball.
It's right. And it helps him being here. It helps him being around the team.
Yep.
It's also like it builds leverage in terms of this is what it looks like when Brock's around.
Yes.
And he's working with his receivers and building rapport, which is something the 49ers have had trouble building because of injuries and contract negotiations. So it actually does matter being in the building and having these guys around versus, I don't know, not hanging around and then, you know, letting like Mac Jones have the run of the roost. And
well, I mean, I think establishing that, hey, I'm here, I'm ready to go, it's on you, is one thing. Two, the franchise tag is a very viable option for him.
Yeah.
Maybe not as much for the 49ers fiscally because of the cash implications of a franchise tag.
Again, not the cap, the cash.
They got nothing but cap, baby. The cash? Leeds made the Premier League. But
yeah. Separate.
Solely separate. Not at all. By the way, everything I read about Leeds, it's like 49ers. But it's totally separate, you guys.
Right.
The same guy who's negotiating Brock Purdy's contract is also trying to figure out the transfer market, but it's totally separate.
And Rangers.
Yeah. Don't
which
worry.
Which is just Scottish football.
Which you want to talk about, we got a body language expert. They need an actual translator speaking the same language.
It is.
They're
beautiful
dealing
country.
With Glaswegians. We love it. We love it so much. It's a wonderful country. okay, I'll be there in July. See you soon. For Brock, it is, okay, one, I'm under contract, right? You have to just take into the temperament
correct.
Of Brock Purdy. I am the quarterback of this team. I am under contract. I am going to play because there is not really any risk of me playing because I'm the quarterback as opposed to somebody who's in the trenches, somebody who's on the outside. Like, quarterbacks,
just take it easy.
They're not looking to get Brock Purdy injured in voluntary OTAs.
Loafing around, throwing a few easy balls to Ricky Pearsall.
He's doing the exact same thing he would be doing off the field.
Yeah.
You know, with the Jacksonville camp or whatever they got going on. So there's no risk in that. There's a lot of positivity right now. The fans are on his side. What a professional.
Yep.
What a guy. Which was always going to be the case.
It only helps him being here.
It only helps him. And it's in his nature. So the idea that this somehow indicates positivity.
Yeah.
I'll say this, John Lynch spoke positively.
It did.
Whatever you want to read into that. But the idea that Brock Purdy being here says, hey, they're right there on the cusp. That's just extrapolation off of a non sequitur data point.
It's also a little bit like you look at the Ayuk thing last year and like
he was here the whole fucking time.
Right. But it was just weird and uncomfortable. And Brock doing the like low maintenance, like, listen, I'm just gonna be here. I'm gonna be professional. I'm just gonna let them take care of the deal. It just only goes well for him by doing that. There's just not much I think he gains by not showing up until it gets to training camp, and then he can start to.
Now, if you want to exert some leverage, you can exert it because if he doesn't show up to this, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
If he does show up to this, it doesn't mean anything. So he can glean some positives out of this. He can show a level of professionalism. He can keep the fans on his side.
Give John Lynch a little slap on the tush.
That's right. You know, he can get some words in for some Iowa State receivers and linemen. Like all of these things. Like, what is he losing? Nothing.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you do it? Because there is something to be gained. On the flip side, he could always, on July whatever, just say, you know, I'm just not feeling it.
Yeah.
you know, we're just not as far as I thought we would be. And now the 49ers are up against it. Now they feel something. Now there's some pressure. So it's always good to play nice until the moment when you have to get down to brass tacks. We're nowhere near that.
Yep.
I don't know what's going to happen, but I just think it's somewhat laughable, folks out here being like, they have to be in a good place if Brock showed up. It's like, no, it's completely separate from any contract negotiations. This is Brock Purdy under contract. Yeah. And by the
way, it's a better indication than if he didn't show up. But
I don't think it had anything to do with anything. Because
I think he was going to show up regardless of the contract negotiations.
If they weren't even negotiating, he'd show up. You know why? Because franchise tag and free agency next year.
And that's
how
he is.
And he's under contract, and that's his temperament. And someone has to throw goddamn out routes to Jacob Cowing, who they're trying to replace in the NFL draft, which starts on Thursday.
With Kyle Williams, almost certainly.
Sorry if that triggered some of you. You're going to all have to get over it. Maybe they'll give him the number.
Oh, God, They should for the bit. I kind of would love that.
That'd be fantastic.
Just haunting the nightmares of...
And have him return the first punt of the season.
Go for it.
Did you get anything from John Lynch?
So the thing that probably took off the most is asked about edge rusher.
You did.
By our guy Cam. And so John Lynch goes, when he talks about the qualities... He's looking for
an edge rushers, baby.
Goes, you've got to have the ability to set a firm edge. That's something we covet. Mm-hmm. Number two, and then they look at, can you put pressure? Can you create pressure? Yeah. Can you threaten? The other part was he's like, you end up struggling when you project too much.
Right.
At some point, the production doesn't lie, which can be interpreted in a number of ways. And also,
what is production?
Right. What is the threshold of production, and what do teams excuse because of injuries or because of how a player was used, and is
it's very subjective.
It can be subjective. So
can be. I mean, it's inherently subjective.
Teams evaluate it different ways. But that was the quote, that you have to be able to set a firm edge, which is like some of these more slippery edge rushers.
Like James Pierce doesn't set edges.
He does not. He was better in the run game than like initially thought. Abdul Carter does not set edges.
There's an archetype. And get this, this is a team that's not looking for a 9 technique. They're looking for a 5 technique. So of course they need to be able to set an edge. It's funny that they say that that's the thing they value most. It's the thing that they haven't had.
It's the thing they desperately need. The only time they kind of had it was with like Charles Omenihu, and Nick Bosa has still been like, please bring him back.
Anything you can do to bring me Charles Omenihu, but that would cost money, and that's not something they're interested
Which,
in
Which the question I wanted to get in, but we ran out of time, is next week the compensatory formula runs out.
God, so, such a fucking nerd.
So my point is, I think it's stupid. But my point is, next week, whoever you sign, if it's over, the threshold for comp picks is like usually around like $3 million for like the last round comp pick. Okay. So guys over that will no longer count to the comp formula. So the 49ers could sign a guy for $4 or $5 million, would not affect their comp picks starting next week.
But there's no one available for $4 to $5 million
left
on the market.
Yeah, but there's some mediocre safeties. There's some, like Justin Simmons, I think, is still out there.
Okay. That market sucks.
Right. The safety market's awful. There's like...
Almost makes you wonder if you should even bother drafting.
Quandre Diggs. That's what I mean about, like, when we were talking about Malachi Starks or Nick Emanwori, safety is really not worth taking in the first round.
Like, not when you can get good, solid... They've been signing dudes off the street and they've been fine.
The safety market is maybe the worst in the league.
It's brutal.
Really bad.
I don't quite understand, because like a great safety
crucial.
Changes everything.
I think
everything.
It's because no one really knows what makes a good safety, so they go, I'm too scared to pay you a lot of money unless it's so obvious.
It's the opposite.
Unless
of
you're literally Derwin James or, you know, Harrison Smith.
What did Justin Reed just get?
Justin Reed got 10 and a half a year.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Harrison Smith got 10.2.
Yeah, but they got a whole thing going on in Minnesota.
C.J. Gardner-Johnson got 9, and then after that it's... Tyrann Mathieu getting 4. So it's like you get some guys at the top that are getting like 10.
Tyrann Mathieu's also like 36.
100 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Harrison Smith's 36.
Yeah, but they got a whole, there's a weird thing going on in Minnesota. That's
correct.
A whole thing. That's a whole thing.
Yeah.
I know.
I know where you're going with this. Let's not go there.
I'm not even going to mention the fact that he's a white guy in Minnesota. The point is that they run a very specific type of defense that he is very suited to. They built the defense around his skill set in many ways.
Yeah.
So
you got like Antoine Winfield at like $21 million a year.
Yeah.
And then Derwin James. And then, you know, it gets to like $10 million fairly quickly. Mm. There's some guys in the middle. And then it's like everyone else is less than 10.
Something else that Lynch mentioned, 20 first round grades, which that's right where I think everyone is. No one has said more than 30. I haven't heard anyone suggest.
No one's even said like 25. Right. Everyone's been like 20-ish.
Right. And then they had 200 draftable players. I'm sure it's not exactly 200. It's somewhere in that ballpark.
Right. He just didn't want to say 197.
Right.
200's clean.
Which would have been cool. There are, of course, 259 picks in the draft.
Yep.
So that's interesting.
It'll be interesting.
A lot of folks have suggested that this is actually a good draft. I am very well on the record that this is a bad draft. I don't like this draft. It is a median versus a mean argument for me. If you have 100 guys who could be drafted in the sixth round, they are in fact draftable, but that doesn't mean you're going to be any good as a football team because you have a bunch of sixth rounders. Just because you can fill out your special teams four times over doesn't mean that you can win football games.
Right. Just because, like, our boy Willie Lampkin's, like, fun and you can maybe play him at fullback like Pat Ricard.
He's totally draftable.
Yeah. Right.
Is he startable in the NFL? Probably
not. At center?
Not.
Probably not.
I don't know at any position. So, right. like, there's a lot of fun. This is a great draft for dorks like us who really enjoy day three
staring
picks.
Into the abyss
and seeing what can be, because there's no risk and all reward on day three. But for a 49ers team that needs seven starters generously,
that's what I asked him. I really would just want to ask him a million times is like, do you actually think you're ready to play?
And what gives you confidence that you can nail this job?
You nailed it last year, and then every year before
they
that.
They nailed it by the way, getting four picks right.
I mean, that's nailing it.
50% is nailing it.
But
they need to go at 80% this year. And by the way, three of those picks are in like the 240s.
Yeah. Yeah,
so those are useless.
Yeah, and they've got that weird gap from 160 on. I'm really intrigued to see if they're going to be able to like negotiate a trade down, because Lynch was like, everybody's trying to trade down. But it's a question of, does someone come up for Genty or Shedeur Sanders?
Boy, howdy.
And do they get to a point where there's like Tyler Warren sitting there, and somebody goes, I want to go get him, we'll trade up.
I don't think it's going to cost much to trade up. I think the 49ers might be prudent in looking to move up a spot or two. I think New Orleans.
I think moving.
A good call.
Yeah, I think totally fair. I think moving down a couple of spots and picking up a third so that you can leverage it and move up. I think you either wait to get Kobe Bryant in like around fourth corner, or do you get like Trey Amos or Maxwell Hairston by moving up a few spots?
Trey Amos counter.
Because I think 43. Is not going to get you there for those guys. And 43 gets weird where it's just going to be the Travion Henderson zone?
Well, that's a great zone to be in. But it is totally dependent on quarterbacks define the draft. So what do we have? We have a quarterback that's going 1-1 who is a fringe first rounder in my book.
Yeah. I have him as a first rounder.
The next quarterback that comes off the board is when? It could be three.
It could be nine.
It could be 18.
Or 21.
Right, like to that effect.
Or not until round two.
Correct.
And someone is probably going to lose their mind over Jackson Dart.
Have fun with that.
Good luck. Good luck to you.
It might work out. He might have gotten all those terrible interceptions out of his
system. It's so funny. Somebody had a comment that was like, he had six interceptions, but it just...
Every one of them you felt in your gut.
Every one was the worst you've ever seen.
Just
literally ended their CFP chances again and again and again.
Best team money could buy. God. So the question is, where do the quarterbacks go? Because if the quarterbacks go earlier, now we're talking about Shug moving up into the top 40, there's a run.
There's a world where you get Shug, Dart, and Milroe all in the top like 60.
Right, and that totally changes a draft board for a team like the 49ers. Now you can sit pretty at 43, because some stuff that might not have come to you originally, it's three or four players difference, but you have a few more options.
There's always someone desperate out there. There's always a Nico Harrison that's like, actually, I shouldn't compare anyone to Nico Harrison.
Yeah, that's...
There's only one Nico Harrison.
I'll say this. Yeah. There are a lot of first-time GMs in the league this year.
Getting a lot of praise before they've done their job.
That's how it works. And they're looking to make a statement. Right?
Yep.
There's a lot of coaches who should have been fired and GMs that should have been fired. And objectively, right, that now still have their job. So what are they going to do to maintain their jobs?
And there's some that have been pre-fired. Shout out Brian Schottenheimer.
I forgot he got hired.
I can never forget that. It's going to go so well in Dallas.
Right.
Good luck.
But you can't fire the GM there.
Correct.
So, nor the owner.
They've done great in the draft.
They're sneaky good.
They
have a good scouting.
They sign any players.
They have a good scouting. It's almost like the San Francisco 49ers as
it's not gotten there yet, but
it's this we're on the Rams plan. I'm like, buddy, that's the Cowboys plan. That's what you're on. The Rams have their quarterback under contract.
Right.
So let's start with that.
Right. As do the Eagles, who just do business very quietly, but just pay all their players.
And give all the void years, which the Niners were doing. They tried the Eagles route.
And then they got scared.
Okay,
then we're buying a soccer team. Yeah. Unrelated.
Totally has nothing to do with anything.
Sure.
The price of gas is up. I don't think we could do this. And so just all of these things add up to a very dire circumstance for the 49ers. I don't want to be hyperbolic about this. Like, they have to nail it.
Well, where the thing about it to me is not just the draft part, because they've got this. And if they're setting up for 2026, right, if that's the plan, okay, but you're on the precipice of, if you don't handle these contract negotiations right, if you don't deal with Purdy, and that rubs Kittle and Warner and some of these other guys wrong, like, those guys say, I'm actually done. I don't like what we're building here.
And I really don't think it comes to that.
I don't think it does, but what I'm saying is, there's a route where you burn through goodwill and your vision towards 2026, and they say, all right, well, you can pay me, and I'll shut up. And then we'll be on board with the 2026 plan, right? But if you don't pay me, then I'm gonna whine and I'm gonna want out, and that can lead to some frustration, and it can burn through goodwill. I'm not saying that that's where this is headed, but contract-wise, if they don't deal with it the right way, there's a very slippery slope there, and then you get to a situation where you're just building through the draft, and this is a draft again without like the blue chip talent. So you're building a team of like tier two at best guys, as opposed to the Fred Warners and George Kittles and Trent Williams, who's getting older, and you might not,
as we all know,
you might just wait until he's gone to try and draft the tackle. And that might, I'm just saying, there's a way they can extend their guys and fill in their needs.
There's three prongs.
Right.
Bring people from the outside, keep the guys you have, and draft new guys in. Those are your three prongs. They've given up on one of them. And then the other two, it's a total crapshoot. They have to figure out the money. They have to figure out what's going on with the draft. I mean, it's an all or nothing premise here. So listen, we didn't learn much today. The stage is set. Thursday's huge. There's a scenario in which this all works out for them. Doom and gloom as we are. You get Michael Williams at 11. You get Trey Amos at 43. You're sitting pretty, and now you can have some fun on day three.
Do whatever else.
Right, or later on in round three. There's also a circumstance where this thing gets out of control real fast, as you outlined with your own players, as the draft goes. The best line Lynch had today was, a draft might break out and you don't know what's going to happen.
Yep.
So we don't know. That's why it's so much fun. That's why we're looking forward to talking to you guys on Thursday. Official Sickos in the chat on Thursday and Friday. And we'll open it up for everybody else in the comments section at other times. It's going to be a blast. Looking forward to it.
Appreciate you, folks.